Live at Titans training camp, Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park. It is Chase Willie and D-Mace, Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin in today as we are live as they have just wrapped up practice with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We say hello to Jonathan Hutton of Outkick 360. You can hear them weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. And Jonathan, we talked briefly right after practice. I thought Ryan Tannehill and the starters on offense had a pretty good day overall.
I agree. I did not see much of the defense, though, so it's going to be difficult for me to focus much on that side of the ball. I'll give some notes, though. Let's start with Tannehill. I thought he was sharp, on point. I've been on the phone, so I don't know what Vrabel has said, but do we have an update on Treylon Burks? Have they said anything on that?
Not that I have seen.
So Burks made a great catch in one-on-ones. Made a great catch with the first team from Tannehill against Sean Murphy Bunting, and then about 30 minutes into practice, went into the training room with the head trainer, Todd Torricelli. So I'm not sure what happened there. He walked off slow, and we'll wait on the official word from Vrabel there, but it was in front of everyone, including the fans here.
Yeah, so obviously not what you want to see. We got to talk to Racy McMath, and I've said now several times, I think he's a lock. I think he is making this roster. He feels like the deep threat that this team has been looking for, and I think that the chemistry he has with Tannehill, you just continue to see grow and grow. I'm not expecting him to be that, you know, double-digit catch guy a game, but I think he could be a big piece for this team.
Yeah, he can play a role. Right, he can be a piece. I think you've said that well. To rely on him though to come in and be like the burner, I think is, you know, we're setting lofty expectations the same way we did that for Nick Westbrook-Ikhine last year. I got it right, Ikhine, not Ikhine. look, the top guys need to be Robert Woods and Treylon Burks. That's who needs to be the top guys, because AJ Brown would have been that. So McMath has been playing well. He's worked his way into a roster spot right now. He's very valuable on special teams, and I think he can play not the same position, of course, but I think he plays sort of an Anthony Firkser-like role for this offense from 2 years ago, where Firkser wasn't the number one tight end, but he was good for two, maybe three catches a game. He had one big breakout game, but he was a role player, and Racy McMath was drafted to be that guy.
Vrabel was asked about Treylon Burks, and he said every practice rep matters, but that was about it. He never really gave an explanation.
Well, I'm happy to mention that he went inside, because fans are out here today, and you know, everyone was talking about it, what was going on, and he walked off with the trainer. So that'll be something to monitor. And look, I'm not trying to cause an alarm either. It could be very simple, as he was going in to get hydrated or going in to use the bathroom, whatever. But normally, if the trainer's walking off with you, chatting with you, it's something to note, especially in a joint practice. They got a lot of work done, though. I paid a lot of attention to right tackle. Dylan Radins, I thought, held his own. Physical practice for him. A couple of times pushed back into the pocket. But for the most part, I thought he was better of the two with Nicholas Petit-Frere, who is lunging at times. Big Joe can speak to this, playing a little offensive line.
Yeah,
he's lunging at times, and I think they're trying to break him of that habit where he gets away with it in college, just like Malik Willis tucking and running. He gets away with that in college. They want him to throw it, and they're working through that with the rookie. But Radins was fine. They formed a nice pocket, and again, it showed, because Tannehill had a great day throwing the football.
We saw Petit-Frere and Radins after 15, 20 minutes after practice working on their drop step over here with Mike Sullivan and some Titans coaches out there. So, again, they want to hopefully in these two practices somebody to solidify themselves at right tackle and move forward with that, and they would love that. I mean, they would love Radins to step up and say, I want this position, I want this job, this is mine, and they've got this week, next week to prove it. Gut feeling now, who goes at right tackle?
I think it's Radins, but, Joe, he's yet to truly grab hold of that, right? Like, the other thing I want to see I want to see if they rotate them tomorrow. You know, like, does Petit-Frere play with the ones tomorrow and they swap them? I wouldn't do it. I would try to lock in with Radins. If he's playing well, keep that going. If Burks is out there, I'm tired of seeing Burks rotate in with the backup quarterbacks. Get him in with Tannehill and keep him there.
Yeah.
And that's the future of the offense. That's what you drafted him high to use him in big moments. And right now, it's tough to pinpoint his specific role, and we can get to that in a moment, But I still don't know if Raidens is the starting right tackle yet. They're trying to figure that out. I would go back-to-back days with him in full pads on the right side and see if he can repeat what he did today.
All right, what stood out to you? And not to say, no, let's get all the negative out here, but what didn't you like about the practice? Anything stood out to you?
I'm just talking with some of the other guys. PK said that Caleb Farley had a rough go of it against some of the Buccaneers receivers. The backup quarterbacks were awful today. I mean, awful.
Willis looks slow.
Well, Willis, first play of a two-minute drill, 11-on-11. He's the second quarterback out. And they went Tannehill, Willis, Tannehill, and then went with a couple of backups and then went back to Tannehill to finish. But on Willis's first possession, first play, two-minute drill, a minute 20 on the clock, one timeout, doesn't see anything, runs straight ahead, slides. That stuff, they're wanting him to throw the football. He tried to step up and throw it as they tried. I mean, he completed a couple passes. They moved it about 20 yards. Time expired. His second go of it, a minute 20, field goal wins. First down run, second down catch on the boundary by Chikwuanko. First down after that, held the ball for 4 seconds in the pocket, threw incomplete on a – would have been sacked on second down, incomplete on third, incomplete on fourth. I mean, it's not like anyone else played much better behind him. So it was bad except for Tannehill, who has looked sharp. It was a really nice day for the first team offense.
Do you really believe – Jonathan Hutton is with us, Outkick 360. Do you really believe that QB2 is open? Or is that just something that maybe Vrabel has thrown out there because that's kind of what he does?
Well, I mean, I think it has to be open, Chase. I mean, when you consider – I mean – in this day and age of the league, you do not want to carry three quarterbacks on your active roster.
Yeah.
And the only move they can make is by keeping – you keep Willis, right? Yeah. That's the only move you can make if you're going to keep two. And if you keep three, well, you're not cutting Willis, right?
Right. So you're not going to sneak him through the practice squad.
Right. And you invested in him to based on traits – but right now, if there's an injury, he's not the first guy I'm turning to. I know he ran and played well, and maybe you can lean on that to get you through a game. And honestly, I don't think it matters who they would put in. They're handing off to Derrick Henry. But, yeah, I mean, right now, I think they have to keep three. So to your question, I mean, they want it to be – you drafted him to be the backup, but and he should be competing for the backup job. We're only two and a half weeks in, really, to really grinding this thing. But right now, I don't see him far ahead of the pack, so to speak, where it's just obvious that they're keeping two quarterbacks. There's still time, though. They want him to stack days, stack good practices. And he threw it more than he threw in the preseason game today. So
what do you make
that's a quality
of the team keep going out and acquiring DBs? I mean, they picked up a DB, went from Kansas City to –
Lonnie Johnson.
They don't have the depth that they want. I mean, I think they're fine. A lot of people are pointing to the injuries that they have right now to some of the starters. Amani Hooker or other guys who are banged up. I don't think they're near as where they thought they would be on a depth right now. So they're trying to look around. And they brought in Joshua Kalu. They bring him back. I mean, they're making trades. I think Robinson sees the depth and sees what happened in the second half of the game, but also just what we've seen here at practice. The backups just are not as good. The Baltimore's backups were better than the Titans. That's really what we took away from the preseason game last week.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Like, yeah, but it's a backup. Like, nobody makes it through 17 games. I mean, you're going to miss a few games here and there unless you're Peyton Manning or Brady. So these backups are so important. So every time I look up, I see, like, they've got a DB coming here. They're trading for a DB. So it just makes you wonder because they talk about how good the potential is, which is the worst word in the world. But, I don't think they're happy with what they got.
And then the other thing, too, that even I fail to think of sometimes is they may also trying to be getting more on who's active on game day. And if you're active at safety and you're not starting and you're just you're in a package, you're playing special teams.
Right.
And if you're not looking the part on special teams, and if you can't add value on those four or five snaps you're getting in that game, if no one ahead of you goes down, you're not valuable as an active member of the 48-man Sunday roster. So that could also play a factor in, as they project of what that roster looks like compared to who's inactive.
He's Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, joining us here at Titans training camp. We'll have more with him coming up next here on Chase Willie and D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Back here at Titans training camp.
Yes.
102.5, 106.3, The Game. Big Joe Dubin, the biggest Magnum PI fan there is.
The
excited
biggest.
About that.
Joe, what's the best high school game in week one coming up?
I am looking forward to...
I could have asked Chase the same question, but I know you are passionate about this question.
I love Hendersonville at Oakland for some reason.
Okay.
I love to see the 6-8. It's Thursday night game.
Okay.
Down in Murfreesboro. And I'd like to see Hendersonville's got a great football team. Oakland defending champion. To me, out of the gate, that's a really good game.
That's cool.
To watch things as the high school football kicks off Thursday night with the full schedule Friday night. How are your Warren County Pioneers going to look?
They're not as good without C.J. Taylor, but they'll be okay. You know, they don't have to play Oakland and Blackman and Riverdale on an annual basis anymore. They swap regions, finally.
Well,
you know, that's why we only won four games my entire high school career there, is the gauntlet of having to play all the Murfreesboro teams, play Rankin every year.
Brutal. Just brutal.
It sucked.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, is with us, and you bring up high school football. You can join Big Joe Dubin and Elijah Campbell this Friday for the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz from 6 to midnight. They'll preview the big games and then take you through the night of high school football around the mid-state. It's the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. You said you didn't get to see the defense as much. We talked to Paul Kaharski, Caroline Fenton during the break, Joe Rexrode, got kind of their thoughts on things. But I actually want to ask you about a guy that's not out here. Monty Rice, still on the PUP list.
Yeah.
And I know he's not a starter. You know who the starters are going to be, David Long and Cunningham there, and Zach Cunningham there in the middle. But I think Monty Rice is an important piece. Yeah.
Yeah, they need him. They need him healthy. And – they need Monty Rice, and I thought he developed well over the course of last year to develop into the David Long version, Long's rookie year going into year two. Long, there's a lot on Long's plate as well, playing next to Cunningham. I like that duo, but we haven't had a strong look at them in a full game yet. So that's, to me, the depth at linebacker and the depth at safety. Those are the two improvements that need to be made, because whenever you get past Rice, who's currently not even available, it's a struggle. And
it's Chance Campbell and Dylan Cole.
It's a struggle, you know, and that's – they will benefit for who they're playing behind on that defensive front, but it's the secondary and the defensive front right now that's the strength of the defense, and that's a great thing. But those are two areas where they cannot afford an injury. With Cunningham and Long, because Rice is on the mend.
Report. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, you had David Culley on your show.
Yeah.
And he had some words about Zach Cunningham of why they let him go.
Yeah, so I asked him about it because early in the chat, Joe, I asked Culley. He was in studio for a golf tournament. And I asked him, so help me here, the league is all of a sudden taking this hard stance on Deshaun Watson, right? They're involved now.
Right.
They wanted nothing to do with it a year ago. They were completely fine with allowing Houston to not be able to make a move with him on their roster and pay him $10 million to be on the active roster. If they cut him, everything's guaranteed and more further guarantees based on not trading him.
Okay.
Cleveland picked up a lot of that, and then they extended his contract. So I said, so help me here. The league, if Watson walked into your office in week 3 or 4, week 8, and said, hey, I've changed my mind, let's go. He's like, we would have played him. And so I was interesting. Like the league gave them no feedback. It was just, this is your, treat him as you would treat any other player. Because they wouldn't put him on the commissioner's list. And at the time when we had him on, long story short, I wanted to get to that point because the league was acting like they were some conquering hero when they stayed in the shadows last year.
Yeah.
And that made me think of, well, you would have played him, but you waived Zach Cunningham, one of the players that Vrabel would specifically mention that they were game planning for every time they would play the Houston defense, and he coached them. And I said, it was you served him up to a division rival. And he goes, I would still do it. It was my call.
Wow.
No one told me to do it. The reports out of, he was vague on why. The reports were he missed a mandatory COVID test. That cannot be the issue. Like, there was something else. But clearly there was a line drawn that Cunningham and Cully did not see eye to eye with, and he got him out as an example of what he was trying to build with the culture in the locker room. But I've seen nothing of the sort or heard anything like that here.
Right.
Like, it was an immediate waiver claim and a huge upgrade. Zach Cunningham is who Rashawn Evans should have turned into when they drafted him.
Yeah.
And you lose Rashawn Evans. You don't pick up the fifth-year option. He's now in Atlanta. But you have Zach Cunningham, who Evans should have been in order to get the fifth-year option.
Right.
So it was a huge upgrade. It allowed them to do some other things to their roster this offseason because they had Cunningham coming back. It was served up on a tee for them. And Cully acted like it was something that was coming for a while, and he had to ship him out.
It's crazy. I mean, and the Titans
didn't even trade him. I mean, it was right after the trade deadline.
Just let him go for nothing.
And you made a good point. Titans get him the upgrade. He's here. He's doing a great camp so far. And what a great linebacker. It was just bizarre to let somebody go midseason like that.
Well, he was one of the hard-nosed, like, see ball, get ball guys for them. I mean, he brought it, man. He bangs hats. Like, he's not the best in coverage, but again, like, you can't run on him.
Right.
And he's fine in coverage. He's much better than Evans. So I was curious about that because he took a harder stance on him than he did with Watson. And Cully's a great human being, by the way. He is salt of the earth. I could not meet a kinder person who I simply walks into the room and sits down and says hello. Like, he's very
cool.
So
you had him in studio.
He was in studio, yeah.
What was his body language when he's telling you about? Because body language says a lot when you say about Cunningham.
Just very businesslike. Just kind of like, I mean, he felt like he was making the best decision for him based on what was where he wanted to take the chemistry of the locker room.
Good. That's just crazy.
And by the way, Watson wasn't around. Like, they had an agreement with him that he wasn't going to come around. He went to every meeting and camp and sat in there because that's where the mandatory fines can be dealt out through the CBA. But then they came up with some agreement where he stayed away and they went about their business. So he had this nucleus that he was trying to build, and he felt like he was doing enough, and McClain and everyone thought he was doing enough to stay around. And they, you know, they fired him after he was trying to cultivate some type of culture without much to work with.
Jonathan Hutton with us, Outkick 360, weekdays 2 to 5 on 94.9 The Fan. Who you got on today?
Ike Taylor's coming on. Speaking of
nice
culture. I can't wait. So he's working with the Believe Network, which is like a podcast network.
Yeah.
And he is also – he was like shadowing one of the head scouts in Pittsburgh. Or he was hanging out with Omar Khan, their new general manager. Anyway, he's been in Latrobe with the former Steeler, with the Steelers, but he's been shadowing the scouting department. So I'm eager to chat with him about George Pickens, who embodies everything that organization. Like, he looks like the Steelers logo in pads. Like, he gets after it. And, you know, of course, with Kenny Pickett and everything. So we're going to dive in on that and get into some league issues as well. I'm still curious what some of these vets think Brady's up to. Like, I'm fascinated by it because no one's talking about it. When it's a great example of just if there's a simple answer, just tell the media, and we'll stop talking about it, about why, you know, he's not here or why he's taking 10 days off. If it's a simple answer and it's not serious and it's not privacy, I don't see the harm in letting us know that.
Did he and Giselle have a trip planned, like, when he retired?
I don't think it's that either, because I think that's a simple – like, you just say that whenever he's coming back, and everyone would bow down to that because the GOAT's back. Like, that's a
– right.
Whenever he comes back, he's like, hey, by the way, my wife, I said I was retiring because I wanted to spend more time with the family, and because of that, she's allowing me to come back for another year, but I'm going on this trip that we've had planned for a while.
Right.
Yeah. Like, that's a simple explanation.
No big deal.
And if someone's throwing out vacation stuff, I'm like, if it's vacation – TMZ is going to break that story, not ESPN.
Sure.
So we'll have those photos on the beach, like they follow around DiCaprio. So I don't know what it is, but it is a little strange seeing the Bucks out here and not having Brady here. But Julio Jones is here. Like,
yeah,
Julio, not going to play.
Julio Jones is practicing on the field.
First time in a year he's been on this practice field.
And meanwhile, Mike Evans stays back. Brady's not here. And Julio, by the way, had a great catch and run in 2 minutes. So.
Godwin's still coming back from the ACL.
I was telling Chase, you know, 2019, and I've said this 1,000 times on the radio the last week, when Brady came out with the Patriots in 19, it was fascinating to watch him, Jonathan, in 101 and 7-on-7s.
Yeah.
He carved up the Titans. But after every play, he would talk to the receiver, like almost as a quarterback receiver coach. And just watch him approach the game and dissect the Titans secondary was something I'll never forget. I've never seen that before or after from a quarterback in that kind of drill.
And then in between plays, when he's not doing that, he's jawing at Vrabel.
Right.
That was entertaining.
It was.
I mean, there was a chemistry with the way he runs a practice. And honestly, I mean, I would have seen more of the defense if Brady were here, because I want to see the defensive backs and the pass rush get after their offensive line and how Brady handles it. But I felt like today was an offensive day, and I'll rotate over and watch defense tomorrow.
Real quick, your buddy John McClain was on with Robbie and Rexrode this morning. He said he thought the AFC West was the best division that he had ever seen, you know, right now, just how they're stacked top to bottom with those four teams. You agree with that?
Yeah. I'm trying to think through if we're basing this on – so I'm guessing – most people would have Vegas as the fourth team if you're predicting it. Vegas is pretty good.
I'm picking them to win the division.
Vegas is a playoff team last year.
Yeah, I'm picking Vegas to win.
So who's your fourth team?
Denver.
Okay. So Denver with Russell Wilson bringing back three of their wide receivers, the majority of their offensive line. They should improve in the run game because they're bringing those guys back too, and they've got talent there. On top of the fact that they have a top four, top five scoring defense – and they're the fourth best team in that division. Yeah, I mean, I think he's right. And John would know. He's seen 50 years of these divisions to stack up.
Right.
It's insane. And I mean, it's not crazy to think we could see three teams from that division get in, especially with the seventh team getting in. Last year, we saw some bad teams vying for the final spot in the playoffs. I don't think we see that this year. I think the NFC is going to be quite a fight as well, especially with like Philly and Dallas. I'm excited to watch that. And look, the AFC East is intriguing because of everything that Belichick has decided to do with their offense. The Bills are excellent. I mean, they are a powerhouse when you see them on paper, and the fact that they lost last year because Allen didn't have the football first. Aside from that, Chase, I'm also throwing in the Dolphins. The Dolphins are very intriguing. But the AFC West has the quarterbacks. They've upgraded on defense. The Chargers were awful at stopping the run. They've tried to address that. Denver trades for Russell Wilson, which is like a top five trade in NFL history. McClain's right.
Yeah, absolutely. He's Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, weekdays 2 to 5. 94.9 The Fan. Hey, thanks for doing this. As always, my friend, we'll talk next week.
Thank you, guys. Good to see you, Big Joe.
You too, brother. Have a good
day. Chase, thank you, man.
Yeah, the MTSU connection here. Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Coming up next, we'll continue to evaluate the Titans, and are they getting a little bit more credit nationally? We'll do that coming up. Chase Willie and D-Mace, Chase and Big Joe to 25-106.3 The Game. Back here, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Chase McKay, Big Joe Dubin, live at Titans Training Camp, Ascension St. Thomas Sports Park, as things have wrapped up for the day between the Titans and the Buccaneers. Coming up at 12:45, your chance to win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach. Big Joe will have his Titans Training Camp trivia question of the day, and it's a dandy.
It is. I stumbled upon it, and I was like, what? And then I looked, I'm like, yeah, this is a real good trivia question. It has to do with the current Tennessee Titans roster. We've had some good questions last week. I mean, one that you were not here last week that we had, which I really liked, was the one in 09. Mike Vrabel was traded from the Patriots to the Chiefs that year. Also, a former Titans quarterback was also part of that trade deal, and it was Matt Castle was traded with Mike Vrabel to the Chiefs back in 2009. And that's how Vrabel ended his career, 09, 010, and 10 with the Kansas City Chiefs.
And I believe Romeo Crennel was his head coach.
Was it the Chiefs at the time?
Or maybe it may have been Todd Haley.
Maybe Todd Haley, yes. Might have been.
I can't remember. But I know he played for and coached with Romeo Crennel quite a bit. So.
Yes, he did with the Texans. You know, I read somewhere after he got traded, I mean, it was you're the Patriots, and then also you get traded to the Chiefs. I don't think him and – it's reported that Belichick didn't talk for years after that. He was kind of upset that he got traded, and
Well, when Floyd got to the Patriots, that was like one of the first things that he was a part of was trading Vrabel.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it was around that time that Floyd came on and was working with Belichick. So.
Yeah, that was it was a good 11 years in between Super Bowls for the Patriots because they won in 10 years, and they won in 14 the next Super Bowl. They lost the 07 versus the Giants, which is a great Super Bowl. Then they won the one in 14 with the against the Seahawks. There was a year, for many years, the only teams in the AFC Championship game were the Patriots, Steelers, Colts was basically about it. The teams and the Broncos a few times. They're always those four teams because the Patriots went to like 9 straight AFC champions, something crazy like that. So the success was there. But yeah, one day you're a Patriot and wake up, and 24 hours later you're the Kansas City Chiefs. Your world's turned upside down.
Chad Brown with 104.3 The Fan in Denver going to join us coming up at 1:00. But are the Titans getting a little more credit now around the league? John McClain, of course, who is a regular on Outkick 360, joined Robbie and Rex Road earlier this morning. Robbie Stanley asked him about the Tennessee Titans and, of course, the Colts.
A lot of people don't want to pick anybody but the Titans, so they're picking the Colts. Every year people pick the Colts, and the Colts have won one playoff game since Frank Reich got there in 2018. That was beating the Texans in the playoffs in 2018 when Andrew Luck had a great game. So they may be better with Matt Ryan, but I don't see them being a Super Bowl contender. The Titans, as you know, got last year, the loss of Derrick Henry for the second half of the season, and the way they continued to run the ball with a bunch of Texans rejects was amazing, a philosophy. And it's kind of throwback football. And without Derrick Henry and the play action that he provides, Ryan Tannehill's not the same quarterback. So to me, as long as Henry is healthy, he not only gives them a great weapon and a threat to rush for 2,000 yards, but he also is a great, great weapon for Tannehill to work that play action magic.
There you go. That is John McClain on Robbie and Rex Road this morning. I love John. Doesn't hold back.
Rejects. They're
a bunch of rejects. But look, he gives more credit to the Titans.
Yep.
Than I think a lot of people are right now. Which again, we've talked about this a lot, Joe. That Mike Vrabel loves that. He feeds off of that. That flying under the radar is kind of the way to go.
He loves it. He loves it. Nobody's talking about us. Nobody's mentioned us. You turn on the NFL Network, we're probably the 27th team they're going to talk about, which is fine. So if you're a head coach, it's us against the world mentality. And every coach loves that. Us against the world mentality. We're going to go out there. Nobody believes in us. Nobody wants us to win. Nobody thinks we can win. You go out and you win games. It's fantastic. I came with this. We were talking about the Colts a minute ago. Fox NFL tweeted this out last night. I found it interesting. Teams with the most MVPs, all right, going back quite a way. What team has the most MVPs in National Football League history? This is according to Fox NFL Twitter account.
What team has the most MVPs in NFL history?
Yep.
Steelers.
Nope. Not even close. In fact, Steelers only have one league MVP throughout their history.
Bradshaw?
Isn't that crazy?
I don't know. Okay, hang on.
It's a great. I was looking last night thinking, this is important. Then I looked in research. I'm like,
So it's not an obvious team.
It is once you hear who it is.
Packers.
Bingo. Jason, good job. Starr.
Starr, Favre, Rodgers.
Yep. Who's second on that? Most team with the most MVPs. Packers have had 10. This team's had 9.
Cowboys?
Nope. In fact, Chaser, the Cowboys have only had
one
MVP. Isn't that crazy?
Staubach?
I guess. Who knows?
I think it might have been Staubach. Second on the list. So
they've had 9 MVPs.
I mean, it's not Patriots because I think Tom had like 3. I don't know.
Colts,
really?
Peyton Manning and?
Johnny
Unitas. And then it drops off. There are 6 teams in the league that never had an MVP. And Jaguars, of course, obviously. Tampa Bay has never had an MVP. Cardinals ever had one, even going back to the St. Louis Cardinals.
Browns?
The Jets. And the Browns have had Browns.
Or Jim Brown may have won it.
Yeah, the Browns, I'm looking on my list here.
They have four.
They have four. Yeah, they're up there. Good job. But Saints never had one. Drew Brees never won anything.
Yeah, that's true.
It's crazy. But it just drops off. So the Packers and the Colts have 19 MVPs combined.
Between them.
Yeah. And the
49ers. The Colts make sense because Peyton and then Johnny U.
Yeah.
That does make sense.
But then San Francisco's got five. But the Titans slash Oilers have two.
Steve and Earl Campbell.
Gotta be Earl Campbell.
Yeah.
Right? Wouldn't it be?
I would think.
And that's a lofty honor, more so than like a Heisman Trophy that goes there. And teams have had one MVP throughout their history. The Bears, Chargers, Chiefs, Cowboys, Eagles, Dolphins only had one throughout history. Steelers was only one. Panthers, with of course, with Cam. Seahawks had one. Lions, Ravens, and the Falcons.
Yeah, Campbell won it in 79.
All had one. Yep.
78 the year before was?
78.
Terry Bradshaw?
Terry Bradshaw.
What was it?
Yep.
You have the list in front of you?
I do.
All right. Give me the – go down like 80. Start from 80, like Super Bowl era, like 80 and up.
Okay. 1980 was a Cleveland Brown, actually.
Brian Sipe? Quarter,
yeah.
Brian Sipe was league MVP?
Yep.
Holy Hades.
81 was Bengals.
Ken Anderson?
Yep.
Okay.
82, Redskins.
Joe Theismann.
Nope.
Oh.
He was the next year.
John Riggins.
Nope.
82.
You won't get this.
Oh, Mark Moseley.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kicker.
Yep. Theismann was 83. Okay. 84.
Marino.
Yep.
Okay.
85.
Jeez.
Raiders.
Marcus Allen.
Yep.
Okay.
86.
LT.
Yep.
Oh, good defensive guy.
Yep.
Well done.
87.
Gosh, that was a strike year. That's the year the Redskins won the Super Bowl. Elway?
Elway.
Okay.
Very good. 88.
That's the year that the 48. Joe Montana.
Nope.
Rice?
Nope.
88. Oh, Boomer.
Boomer.
Boomer Esiason.
Yep. 89 and 90. Same guy.
Jerry Rice.
Nope.
Montana.
Yep.
Okay.
You want to keep going?
We're good for now.
Okay.
This shows how old and how after life I could rattle these off.
Well, give me 91. You should know 91.
91 was the year. Jim Kelly?
Nope.
That was the year the Redskins.
Right team.
Thurman Thomas?
Yep.
Okay. That was the year he lost his helmet in the Super Bowl.
Yep.
And couldn't find it, and the Redskins beat him right there. But the 03 was McNair and co-MVP. McNair and – how many did Peyton win? Because he won 03, tied it with McNair in 03.
Was that Peyton's first one? In 03? Yeah, it was. He won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Goodness.
6. No, yeah, 5.
5.
Yeah, he won because his last one was in 13 with Denver.
Has Brady ever won a league MVP?
Yeah.
The Patriots?
Brady won in 17, 10, 07.
Okay.
So he has 3.
Okay.
In fact, Tom Brady in 07 started a streak – that is continuing. No, I take that back. Had started a quarterback streak, and then it got broken in 12. But
who won in 12?
Adrian Peterson.
Did he really?
Yeah. Okay. He's the last non-quarterback to win MVP.
That makes sense. I'm glad LT won in 86. Before there were a lot of defensive guys, but that's the last defensive guy, 36 years.
I think he's the – there are two defensive guys that have won the MVP.
Bob Lilly?
Nope.
Lambert?
Purple People Eaters.
Carl Eller?
Nope.
Alan Page?
Yep.
Okay.
Alan Page in 71.
It's good defense that year. They didn't win Super Bowl.
A fullback. A couple of fullbacks. They have Jim Brown listed as a fullback.
No,
so
he
gets that. But Jim Taylor, the Packers, was an MVP.
Yeah.
He's listed as a fullback.
Yeah, I could, in those days. I mean, that'd be great to watch those teams because all they did was sweeps and just punch you in the face going down the field. It wouldn't like these 7-on-7 drills.
All right, load up the line. 615-737-1025. Your chance to win tickets to see Papa Roach. You must answer a trivia question. That's all coming up next. Chase Willie and D-Mace, Chase and Big Joe in today. 1025-1063 the game. 1025-1063 the game. Chase Willie and D-Mace, Chase McCabe, Big Joe Dubin. Here with you. Big Joe, Caroline Fenton will be here tomorrow. Willie D will be back On Friday, it'll be the Sports Revolution reunited.
It will be.
Willie and Big Joe. For those of you that have listened to our station for a long time, we'll remember Willie and Big Joe in afternoons, and they had some intern that stuck around.
What's that guy doing now?
I don't know.
I love being with Willie because that segment about NFL MVPs.
Yeah.
Our love for sports trivia. He's got me on hockey, which I don't know anything about hockey except I love the Nashville Predators. But as far as anything
you and Sean Henry are best friends.
We are. I love Sean Henry. But it's fun to talk that because it's just not current history. I mean, you go back a ways with all that's going on. So it'll be fun to catch up with Willie on Friday.
We have a texter on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com that Viking Matt is his name. You mentioned the Minnesota Vikings, and, I mean, it's just like this antenna goes off.
Good.
You know, he got Alan Page right away. You know, so you can bring up anything. Like, my first NFL game that I went to, 1998, day after Christmas, December 26th, Vanderbilt Stadium, the Tennessee Oilers, last game ever is the Tennessee Oilers.
Right.
Taking on the Minnesota Vikings.
I stood in the tunnel next to Brian Billick and Randy Moss. So Brian Billick was offensive coordinator in 98 for the Vikings. Gigantic.
Yeah.
Huge. And then Moss is right there. I'm thinking, that's Randy Moss right there. And also, what's funny about that 98 season is the seed was set for the 99 tie. That team was 8-6. The 98 Tennessee Oilers team going their last two games. They lost on the road to Green Bay. And they lost at home to a very good Vikings team that went to the NFC Championship game. But the seeds were kind of set like, all right, there's something here. And then the motivation of getting the new stadium, the change in the names, and then it took off. But, yeah, that was Moss. Was that something else to watch him at Vanderbilt Stadium?
Oh, yeah. I mean, as a 11-year-old kid, you know, the Oilers, I still hadn't bought in yet. You know, it was like now it was my first game, but, you know, McNair was playing, obviously Eddie George, but I hadn't quite bought in because, you know, as we talked about yesterday, I still felt like, well, this is just the Houston Oilers. You know, that's who they are.
And they were at Vanderbilt.
They were at Vanderbilt, and so it wasn't much of an atmosphere. But, you know, I sit back now and I go, do you realize how good of a team you saw in that 98 Vikings team that, you know, Gary Anderson misses a kick and they're going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, absolutely.
But I mean, Carter and Moss – and I think Randall Cunningham was the quarterback of that team.
Was Robert Edwards on that team at running back? It was at Ohio State. I think he was on that team as well.
Viking Matt will tell us. Don't worry.
the John, the lineman that's down the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
John Randall. All right,
yeah.
Can we give the question now?
Let's do it. 615-737-1025. Go ahead. Ask the question.
Ryan Tannehill right now holds one NFL record. What NFL record does Ryan Tannehill hold currently? Now, he's tied with two other players, but he still has this record currently. Now, this record could be broken September 11th in the first game by any other quarterback. But right now, what record does Ryan Tannehill hold or is tied with in the NFL? We brought it up during the break. We're both like, huh? What? So what is it? What record currently does Ryan Tannehill have in the National Football League? And Ryan Tannehill, if you're listening, you are not eligible for this.
Viking Matt says Robert Smith.
Robert Smith. That's
who you're talking about.
Robert Edwards. Robert Edwards was a guy that was drafted out of Georgia for the Patriots, played in the rookie Pro Bowl game on the beach in Hawaii and blew out his knee, like the nerve in his knee, and never played again. Awful, awful injury on the beach for him.
Mm.
Yes, Robert Smith, heck of a running back from Ohio State. Thank you, Viking Matt.
All right, 615-737-1025. You get that question right, you will win a pair of tickets to see Papa Roach, which is coming up. I should probably tell you when that actually is coming up. That's what makes a good show host. August 31st at Municipal Auditorium. Joe,
I know
you have seen several.
Oh, Municipal was the best thing back in the day. My first concert I ever saw was Hart and John Cougar.
Nice.
Back they also saw in 1982, the Police played, but there was a band that played before them at Municipal, and people remember this, that really was fantastic. It was the English Beat, and just they simply go by now the Beat, and they were so good. But as I've told you, and I've written about this many times, even on the Van Halen message boards, that the best concert ever, February of 1984, Van Halen played at Municipal. And it all too often, you'll see great bands, but at that moment, Chase, in 1984, Van Halen
was at their peak.
Was it the top band in the world? Yeah. In the world. I mean, there was no other band that was touching them in 1984. They played in Knoxville the night before, then Saturday night, they played, I think the tickets were like $12. And we went to the concert at Municipal. Municipal only holds like 8,000 people, but there was 100,000 people there. That's how many stories we've told throughout the years. I'll never forget, though, Autograph, you know, turn on the radio. They opened for them, right? So they came out, they start playing, get booed. There's a friend of mine who's a section over, launches the top of a pizza box, right? Like a Frisbee. I kid you not, and we all remember this, hits the lead singer dead in the head. I could give you 15,000 tries to do that. You won't do it. He just throws it. It goes high, goes low, and makes a dead eye right to the lead singer. And they left stage right after that. They were done. I felt bad for him. Oh, that's a good song. But everybody just booed.
But that's all they had.
Yeah. Everybody booed him off the stage, and they were gone. So it was really cool. But that was, yeah. Go see concerts at Municipal. They're a lot of fun, man.
I saw Kool & the Gang.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At Municipal?
Yep. I was like, I forgot. I mean, I was young. I don't really remember it. But I was probably like 4 or 5.
Yeah, Prince would come by and play Municipal back in the day. If you've ever been to Municipal, you go and they've blown up all the ticket stubs that you can see up there big time. And so that was the only place to go. Now, Murphy Center was a place as well. Yep. A lot of acts went down there. We had Starwood, Municipal, Murphy Center, and the Bridge had opened in 96, and that kind of changed the game with everything.
My first rock concert was at Starwood. It was Aerosmith. Nice. 2001.
Okay.
So, and they were fantastic.
Yeah, I saw Aerosmith in 87, 88 at Starwood, and their opening act, Guns N' Roses.
Oh, nice.
It was fantastic. I think Van Halen was good. A really good concert, if you remember, if you've been around here in 1987, the Beastie Boys and Run DMC at Starwood.
Oh, I bet that was good.
That was just right in the middle of how popular, how amazing they were, and that was a heck of a show.
All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to Chad Brown, 104.3 The Fan. He will join us also with Compass Media. We'll do that next on 102.5, 106.3 The Game.